Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 3rd of December. Good. Very nice.
Take
That's
two.
All right. We'll fix it in post.
Try it again.
Good. It's the 3rd of December, Anno Domini 2011, and you possibly lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, you stuff to use, things to choose, nothing to lose, tongues to tie, and shoes to untie. We're going to start with Carrier IQ. Extensive data logging software known as Carrier IQ has been discovered to be secretly running on many mobile phones, including a number of handsets powered by Google Android, prompting one U.S. senator to demand answers from the company. Senator Al Franken, Democrat of Minnesota, issued a letter on Thursday to Carrier IQ and its CEO, Larry Lenhart, to explain exactly what his company software records on users' phones, what is software... company software records on users' phones and how it works. Franken's concern was prompted by Trevor Eckhart, a security researcher who has been digging into the presence of Carrier IQ on Android devices. The Carrier IQ software has been shown to be able to log extensive information, including when phones are turned on and off, contents of text messages they receive, what websites they visited on a phone, even location data. Franken has asked the company to explain exactly what is recorded, whether it is transmitted to other companies, and if the company would allow users to stop this data logging. Only now, some skeptical voices are being raised in the case against Carrier IQ, and they say it may be a rush to judgment without a real, or at least an adequate, basis in fact. The company has been pilloried the length and breadth of the World Wide Web for a better part of a week, accused by a growing chorus of selling smartphone spyware in the form of a rootkit and keylogger to mobile carriers. The accusations and outrage hinge on a YouTube video posted by a 20-something systems administrator, Trevor Eckhart, purporting to show the smartphone program recording keystrokes and seeing SMS text messages. Yet Eckhart failed to use some basic tools that could have confirmed what he and many others think he saw. The interpretation of this video is inaccurate, says Dan Rosenberg, vulnerability security practice lead for Virtual Security Research, a Boston-based consultancy. He copied the Carrier IQ software from several HTC and Samsung Android phones and loaded it into a disassembler to expose and read the machine instructions. What he found was debugging output, Rosenberg says, which is intended to let developers go through a program line by line to iron out problems. As such, displayed in a debugging buffer, those details are not stored on disk or collected as data, he says. They are not actually storing keystroke data at any point anywhere, Rosenberg says, much less sending the data back to carriers. Temporarily putting this information in a debugging buffer is a questionable practice. They're printing debugging statements that show keystroke data. That's not an immediate threat, but it's sort of like why you don't want to write down your password so you don't have sensitive data lying around somewhere. But that practice is not like logging data and sending it to carriers. So we're still in the middle of all this, but now we have both the pro and the con. So our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis, like us to remind you, are you worried about Carrier IQ? The choices are yes, really worried. Nah, I figure it's no big deal. I don't have a smartphone, and I prefer blissful ignorance. Thanks. So far, we've got in the high 30s here in terms of our poll, and 39, as a matter of fact. And so I know you people. I know that you're going to have more to say about this. So when you are done taking the poll, check the yellow box underneath. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to another truly great website where you can, in fact, enter your opinion. The question there is, how worried are you that your smartphone is spying on you? Then I come on back here, and we'll be doing thank you. Crowds love it. And, of course, that's our question to you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, one of the big things I read about Carrier IQ is from its general description, it sounds innocuous enough, and it sounds like what cell phone carriers would want. It tells you when SMS messages fail to be delivered. It tells you when calls are dropped. And then you think of it the other way. It watches your SMS messages. It watches your calls.
Right, but if it's not sending those data out anywhere,
right.
If it truly is only in the phone diagnostics,
mm-hmm.
then I don't care. You would literally have to grab my phone and tear it apart and pull out the chips without taking them off electricity, or load another app on that lets you look at them.
Right. And if someone has physical access to your device, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't
what
matter.
You've got.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right, right. So,
and most devices you can turn off. Now, the trick is for the iPhone, Apple said that they're not using it on the iOS 5 on the iPhone 4S, on their current software on their current phone. But on the iPhone 4, the previous phone, it is still partially used. In the phone settings, for most phones, there's an option to turn off diagnostic information and turn off debugging information. It doesn't say turn off carrier IQ. It says turn off diagnostic information, and that's the buzzword you're looking for.
Right, right. So it is much less a big deal than everybody thinks it is. Do I care if my phone has internal debugging information? No, as long as it doesn't go anywhere else. And so far, there is no, according to this guy who tore it apart, and he seems to be an independent third party. I mean, everybody seems to respect the guy. According to the guy who tore it apart, he says there's nothing in there to send it anywhere. And if that's the case, then I don't have a problem with it. You know, when I write software, I have debugging information. You know, how many of us writing code, somewhere in there, there's a, you know, debug equals on, and then you set it to debug equals off. The code is still there. You're just not using it. Or you'll save a log, and when something goes wrong with the software, how many times do you hear, well, send me the log, and yeah, I'll see if I can debug it for you. Well, that's actually kind of a service. So most software saves some form of debugging information. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a log to send that. So I don't if it's not sending it off my phone regularly, then I don't really have a problem with it. I just don't.
Yeah. What was interesting on some of the blogs I read is they were likening this back to the iPhone tracking issue that came out earlier this year.
Right.
And Steve Jobs had said, "We don't track your data. It's diagnostic information. We can't tell that's you. It's just a phone, and everyone does it anyway. And no one believed him then."
Right. Everybody does do it. That doesn't necessarily see, but I don't. You know, I was just following orders. Everybody else does it.
Yep.
You know, now I channel my mother. If everybody you know jumped off a cliff, would you jump?
Sure.
Probably because I was 14 and stupid.
Yeah.
Yes, I probably would, Ma. Thanks.
We would do a lot of things. My mother, God love her, if she was alive, would probably her hair would curl if she knew some of the stuff that I did as a kid. And I sit there and wonder, damn.
I will say this.
Yeah.
Not only did I do dangerously stupid things.
Same here.
There was a time in my life when I paid particular attention to the statute of limitations on certain things. And
really?
As far as I'm going to go with that. I'm just telling you that I was an idiot when I was younger. I was an idiot.
Oh, one other feedback. I did get an email from that individual, Pat in Greece. Said, thank you also for the information on what I'm talking about is the wireless mouse.
Oh, right, right, right.
That put a number of folks at ease.
Yep.
And I had a couple of emails, like I say, and I said, well, thank you. That's what we're here for.
The mouse is not, if the keyboard could be a problem, the mouse is
right,
not.
Right, and, you know, they feel a little more comfortable. And, you know, I said, really enjoyed your show. You guys have a lot of information. And I says, well, that's the thing about it. We always say there's no dumb question. The only dumb one is the one you don't answer or ask, so we can answer it.
That's right.
And we have fun doing it. That's why we've been doing it for 23 years, you know. And we even get, like I told her, this other one, you know, we get a lot of folks that'll turn around and have answers to help us out. We're not sure on something, and then somebody will call in and say, oh, well, I did this and this, and it works great. And sure enough, the person tries it, and it does.
Yep.
You know, and another listener was very surprised. She goes, well, do you screen all these calls and then hit, you know? No. When people call.
Unless we accidentally drop the call.
Yeah.
This place was made for truancy notices rather than.
Yeah.
The phone system was designed for truancy, sick calls rather than what we do.
But we get folks calling in, and yeah, no, we don't sit there and say, all right, we'll call you back next week and we'll have the answer. When you call in, we're giving you the answer right then and there. They thought, oh, we prepare for it.
or some of those other call-in shows where they call ahead of time, know the answer, and then pick up the phone on the air.
Leave your question, and they call you back and say, all right.
Not us.
And it sounds like they know these most remarkable and obscure things live on the air. Yeah. We're live on the air, baby.
This is live, baby.
Yeah, here without a net, and you know we literally take everybody's questions.
If I swear, Dave's got to jump for the dump button.
Oh, speaking of which,
where is it?
Better turn that on.
Oh yeah, you know what? I heard one of the other stations said they got a dump button, or is my dump button? You know, it's a one shot deal,
right?
Whereas some of them they can do it in 5 second. Increments,
yeah,
and they build it up to say like 20 minutes, and they can do 5 second burst. Yeah, that's all you got to do is usually that word and boop.
Yeah,
but I can sit there and pop them, and they're done.
Yep,
they're gone.
Yep, but yeah, it's pretty amazing. I've begun to pay attention. I have for years now paid attention to other talk shows.
Yeah,
most of them aren't really. Unless it's the show where people are just calling you with an opinion.
Yes.
And your opinion can be the same as mine or different. But call-in shows where you ask a question, very, very few of them are live.
Mm-hmm.
Very few of them.
We are one of the rare ones.
Apparently, we weren't bright enough to figure out to do it the other way. That's the real problem right there.
Oops.
I think that's exactly where we are with that. I'm over in the IRC chat. I was actually talking to a guy on Google the other day who was the guy who invented IRC.
Oh wow!
Yeah, Google Plus. He's a Googler now. I think that's how they get their people. They just say that's a pretty cool thing. Who wrote that? Let's hire them.
IRC was in the '60s, wasn't it? It's one of the earliest.
Yeah.
Ah. I keep searching for who invented IRC, and it came up the history of Iraq.
Yeah, right. Chris Reich, a friend of the show, Chris Reich, is on the thing. He said, do you think people would pay extra for services promised not to track anything? I hope so, actually, because I'm working with a startup company who is very respectful of people's privacy. And the stuff we do, we make sure nobody ever gets hold of ever. Yeah. That's our promise.
We talked about that with, who was it, Dell and some of the PC companies were charging more to ship PCs without crap on them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, because, they get a discount for bundling all of that software on your computer. So if you want a clean computer without all that crap, you got to pay more.
Yep. Yep.
Well, that's...
And our Chandra wants to know, so Dave, what are your kids doing that you have no clue about? And I don't care. As long as I don't know it, I sleep at night. That's how that works. Are you kidding?
Yeah, my two daughters are grown. And
you see, the problem is you got to watch out for your grandkids now.
Yeah, I've got got six grandkids. So yeah, I don't. That's the nice thing. Grandkids come and they go. The parents are responsible, but God love it. My grandkids are all great. I mean, good kids, and they're still young. So. I don't have to worry too much, but
I've always felt bad internally when my daughter or her friends or my godchildren would ask me something, and in my head I would say, "Yeah, I did that stupid thing myself," and it really you do it.
I'd break their legs.
But then you have to say to them, you know what? It is your life.
Well,
I don't know what else to tell you. It's your life. You got to go live it.
Well, I can honestly say my one daughter, oldest daughter, Melissa, talk about doing dumb things. At our house over in Selkirk, there was a big snowstorm. She got up on the roof, jumped off the roof into a snowbank, messed up, I believe it was her knee.
Oh, yeah.
And still paying it for this day. You know, it's like, yeah.
I came home one day many, many, many years ago. My wife is at market this week. Last week she was listening to the show. I could not have told this story. I came home from work and she said, oh, I cleaned the gutters today. We have a huge house.
Yes, you do.
And I said, how exactly? I'm not quite sure I put it this way, but I said, how exactly did you manage that? Oh, I went out the attic window, hung out the window and used the... And I said, are you a moron? You could have fallen three floors
on
the concrete.
Yeah.
She said, oh,
The my trellis friend, made out of that really weak wood, right?
Well, no, she said my friend, a friend of hers, she used to come over all the time, was inside holding on to a rope tied around my waist. I said, Elaine, not for nothing, but she weighs like 42 pounds with bricks in her pockets.
Oh.
If you'd gone out the window, she'd have gone
She's
with you.
Going right by.
I just, that was oh, just wow. one of those things. I said, you know what? The reason I work for a living is we can hire other people to risk their lives.
Yeah.
Let's do that next time.
Yeah, because it's like my house, you know, having the two stories. I'll do a ranch house or that. I helped a friend.
Oh, yeah, I've done that myself, but not a three-story house. I'm not going to do it.
I'll go up, you know, yeah, same with mine. You know, right. I do not go on those upper gutters. The lower ones on the porch and on the backside, I'll do.
Yep,
but when it comes to the upper two,
I'll get up on the ladder and do the extension of the house, which is the one story, right? So I'll go out in the back and, you know, before we bought the house, they built a second bathroom off the kitchen.
Yeah.
And that's on the first floor. It's just one. I'll go up and do that. That's not a problem.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go up three floors.
No.
You know, you're 40 feet off the ground because we've got high ceilings. I'm not interested in falling to my death.
I've helped friends with their, you know, ranch houses. Pff, no problem. I'll walk up on the roof. That doesn't bother me. But like you say, once you get up to three stories, matter of fact, the guy that was doing my gutters, I got to find another person now that was doing it, doesn't like doing three-story houses. And when you go talk about three-story houses, in the backside of mine, is the house sits up on a hill and then goes down. So getting to those upper gutters on the backside, it's almost like going up to the fourth floor.
Yep.
It's much higher.
Yeah, my house is built into a hill. Yeah. So it's technically a two-story house, but from the garage to the attic is four stories.
Yep. Well, we had a guy come up and do our chimney. And he had to put a bunch of, you know, he reinforced it and he put a couple extra rods on it. And he just got up on a ladder and was climbing over our roof like he was a monkey. And I thought to myself, no, thank you. You go ahead. Knock yourself out, but I'm not going to do it. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 20 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. You know, that's something you don't hear much on this station. Is a real radio voice.
And we're in downtown.
The temperature in downtown Rochester is 43 degrees. It'll be balmy and sunny, and it'll be great.
And we're in downtown Greece?
Apparently, we're somewhere near. I don't even know where downtown Greece actually is.
That's either the mall or the town hall.
Yeah, right.
It's wherever I put it.
It's exactly right.
I'm doing the weather.
Wherever you are
is downtown.
Yeah. Well, I started labeling that back when I started doing my show. You know, it's like Greece. Downtown Greece, because we're close to the center of Greece. You know, I consider
the middle of Greece is different from downtown Greece.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Special place that I put.
Middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere.
We're here. No, it's somewhere because we're here.
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to go immediately to the phones, and we're going to talk to Frank from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
We're here with a few questions. I recently bought a Sony computer, and I had some TIFF files, some photographs in TIFF format, and I put them on a drive, and then I put them in the computer, and it says it can't read it. I have to buy a Corel Paint.
Well, it is true that TIFF is not a normal format. A lot of things can't read it. If you want to just look at them and not actually manipulate them in any way, there's a product called IrfanView, IrfanView, at IrfanView.com. Steve will put up a link if we don't have one already.
Yeah, I've got it.
And I'm pretty sure it does TIFF. I'm just bringing it up now.
One of the issues I've also seen is that some people mistakenly assume they can rename the file and change it. So if someone created it in Corel Painter, CPR, whatever its original extension is, they may have just named it .tif, and it isn't really a TIFF file. It's really a Corel Painter file.
Right.
And in that case, you would have to have Corel Painter to view it. So you may have to go back to whoever you got it from and ask them to make sure it's really a generic TIFF file.
Where I got it from was from an Adobe Workshop. You know, it was a JPEG originally, and then it says, how do you want to file this? And I put down TIFF. You know, I wanted to change them to TIFF.
Right.
You were using Photoshop to change it to TIFF?
Right.
Well, then that's extremely weird that it would think you need Corel Painter. Did you ever have Corel Painter on your machine? Or a demo of it, maybe?
Yeah, that's what happened.
Anytime you install a program on your computer, it assumes it's the only program you're ever going to use.
Right.
And so you're trying to open a TIFF, and Corel Painter is left in there and saying, oh, you've got Corel Painter. You need to use Corel Painter. But if it was a demo, it probably expired.
On the other hand, you can also just download Earth and View, which is free. And when it comes up, it'll say, oh, you've got a whole bunch of file formats that aren't set to me. Should I do that? And say yes. And then anytime you click on a TIFF or pretty much any graphic format that exists, you'll get it in Earth and View, and you'll be able to view it. Now, you'll be able to do some things with it, but not a lot.
It's Earth and View. How do you spell it again?
IRFANVIEW, earthandview.com.
And there's a similar program for the Mac called graphicconverter.net that started out as a graphic converter and can open hundreds and hundreds of formats.
Right.
And also has basic editing capabilities.
Right. Now, as I say, Earth and View is free, but you can also make a donation to the person to Irfan is actually the guy's first name. I don't remember what his last name is, but the guy's name is Irfan. And if you donate, that would be a great thing because that's the sort of thing that encourages people like Irfan to continue making products. So if you can, please feel free to make a donation. That would be great.
Sure.
But Irfan View itself is free and opens dozens of formats. I can't even count them all here, but I sincerely doubt there's a semi-common. It even opens audio and video files, including OGG files and MP3 files and MPEGs and MOVs and MP4s and WMAs. I mean, it just does AVIs. It does
countless.
Everything.
Yep. Irfan Skiljan from Bosnia.
Ooh.
And right. He's got a nice picture on his website of the waterfalls in his hometown of Jadzi.
Possibly.
I know I'm pronouncing it horribly.
Right. But basically, there it is about the author. But basically, Irfan View does an amazing amount of stuff. It may well be in terms of viewing files. It's very possible that it would be the only product you will ever need. And it has some mild paint features. You can draw lines and circles and arrows. You can straighten images out. You know, things like that. You can do a slideshow, and you can even save a slideshow as an EXE or screen file so that you can make it your screensaver, or you can just put it on another machine and just run it. You can burn it to CD. I mean, like I said, this is a phenomenal piece of software. This guy spent years making this thing and improving it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, he says over the years he's gotten 60,000 email messages thanking him and congratulating him, wishing him well, and at least a dozen women who have wanted him to father their children.
He lots of special effects like sharpen and blur and things like that. So it'll do screen capturing and there's a bunch of plugins you can add to it to do all kinds of things. So it's pretty cool. And it's only one EXE file. There's no DLLs. No shareware messages, no registry changes unless you approve it. Just an amazing amount of stuff.
It's interesting. Irfan View is Bosnian, and Graphic Converter is German. So a lot of guys in Europe doing a lot of cool software.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And basically it's free, but he says if you're going to use it commercially, please pay for it. And that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's saying $12. It's $12.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's
not bad for everything it does.
That's
so.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. All right, anyway, Irfan View is a pretty cool product, and you should check it out.
Okay, my next question is, I thought all computers, this same Sony computer, cannot read PDF files.
No computer can read PDF files without the proper software.
With Adobe.
You can get a free reader from Adobe, the Adobe PDF reader.
Or better would be Foxit.
Better is Foxit.
Yeah, I love Foxit.
Foxit doesn't have as many security holes as the PDF reader does.
Nothing has as many.
On the Mac, you can use a Preview that comes with the Mac operating system or also the Adobe reader as well.
I can't transfer Adobe from one computer to another.
You don't transfer it. You download it.
You download the free Adobe
because
Reader.
It's got to be installed in the computer to install the proper files.
Uh-huh.
It's free and easy, but go with Foxit. Foxit is a lot better.
At foxitsoftware.com. It's a freebie.
Foxit.
Foxit. Foxitsoftware.com.
Excellent product, and like I say, like Steve was saying, a lot less holes than Adobe, so it's running efficiently. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It also has a bunch of add-ons, like for example, Eastern Asian language support and all kinds of things. So there's a Firefox plugin and toolbars for browsers, a spell checker. I mean, there's all kinds of things in there. So check it out. It's certainly it's free, and so if you like it, then you win, and mm-hmm. if you don't, all you've lost is a couple of minutes.
Okay, my next question is flash drives.
Mm-hmm.
They all require drives to run them, right?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Drivers,
in other words, when you plug
you
it into the machine, that it'll recognize it.
Right.
Yeah,
the mass storage drivers are built into Mac and Windows, so you shouldn't have to install any software.
Right.
Okay, but if you got 20 or 30 flash drives, isn't it taking up a lot of space?
No, I mean, a flash drive is only present when it's plugged in. Once you unplug it, it doesn't see it anymore.
If you want them plugged in all at the same time, then you've got to buy a bunch of hubs, and you will eventually run out of drive letters, yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see. So it's only working When it's physically connected.
You know, you would have a bunch of them, and they could all be the E drive, one after the other, as long as you unplug one and then plug another one in.
Mm-hmm. Right? I see.
So they're really a removable. You don't think of them as a drive in the sense of the drive in your machine.
Right.
What they really are is removable storage. And once you remove it, they essentially just disappear from the computer.
They're like a huge floppy. You know when you put a floppy in?
Uh-huh.
That's all it is. It's a huge floppy. It replaced the floppy drives. Because you can store, gigabytes now on a flash drive.
Uh-huh.
That's all it is.
So you guys run stores, I assume.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
A couple of them do. I don't.
Okay, where are you located, putting a plug-in for yourself?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you go to our webpage, soundbites.org, and both of our shops are listed there.
Oh, okay.
All right. Right at the top of the page, you'll see graphics for both of their shops.
Uh-huh.
And you can click on those links.
And there you go.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Have a good day.
Frank had a lot of questions, actually, and that's fine. The interesting thing is IrfanView. Man, oh, man, what an amazing piece of software. I mean, he's really been working on that for just decades, and it's a huge piece of software and really, really fine. It's pretty amazing, pretty dang amazing. All right, our next caller may possibly be Joya.
Yes, it is, sir.
Joya from Rochester, New York. Welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
Peachy. How do you spell Joya?
Joya.
Very
just
good.
Like it sounds nice.
I see that. I just didn't know if you did it
just for the record.
Phonetically,
I had it spelled correctly
from Rochester.
Yes, that's how my mother spells it.
Well, and she ought to know.
Yes.
What can we do for you?
Okay, my question is about a cable card. I have a Time Warner DVR box. I want to get rid of it because they keep going up on pricing. And I've heard that a cable card can be used to record premium cable channels, like on your laptop.
Right. The problem is that digital cable these days is all encrypted. And you need to rent the cable card from the cable provider in order to decrypt that cable to watch those television shows on your device.
Right.
And so you have to rent that directly from Time Warner. But it's what we've been hearing from people who've been trying to use it in their TiVos and standalone DVRs is it's ugly and messy and often doesn't work well.
Oh. So if I rented this cable card and somehow got it connected to my laptop,
no, it doesn't go
media
in a
player.
It doesn't go in,
work well.
No, it doesn't go into a laptop. It goes into a television receiver, like a TiVo or a standalone DVR.
And some televisions actually have a slot for the cable card.
Oh, I see.
But it is not. Well, it is a replacement for the cable box, but it's from essentially the same company that makes the cable box.
It's cheaper. Well, the last I knew, it was $10 a month to rent a cable card for each television and each device you want
right.
to be able to see that TV on.
And it really doesn't do recording because it generally plugs into a television that doesn't have a hard drive in it.
So you'd have to buy a standalone DVR, which are sold with cable card slots in them, and try to get those to work in your cable system.
Okay,
it's not
so
an easy
no
to
way
use.
You can buy a tuner card for your laptop and plug it into that some kind
of
way.
Oh, sure, yeah, there's a bunch of those.
Yes.
Oh, really?
But now comes the question of...
You can't do...
You've got a laptop.
Right.
How are you
going to
connect it? If you're connecting it through USB, that's very slow.
Okay.
And again, you can't do the encrypted television stations. You can only do the unencrypted television stations.
Right.
And for that, it would be as useful to get an HD antenna and a converter, plug that in, and pull in the local signals off the air, because I don't know what else is unencrypted.
There are some, well, you can go through the analog. Most of the analog channels are unencrypted.
Yeah.
There are a few digital channels that are unencrypted. It's called the QAM. Very few of the digital channels, and none of the premium channels are unencrypted.
Right.
So typically what you would do is I'm most familiar with the products for the Macintosh. There's one called the Elgato HD, and you take the video connector that comes out of the back of your cable box and plug that into your computer, and then you can watch TV on your computer and record TV
but
on your computer.
But you still have to have the
cable box to decrypt the signal.
Right. Yeah. Well, I tried that. I do have a USB tuner card. My laptop, and I did plug it in from the box, but it really didn't pick it up. So,
well, you have to put your TV tuner card on channel 3 just like you would if you were plugging a television into the box. And then the box is your tuner, and you change channels using the cable box.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll try that.
So you can go with a cheaper cable box without the DVR in it and use your computer as the DVR.
Right. That's basically what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
So I guess I wasn't aware how to do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try what you just said.
The other way to do it is to use subscription services like Netflix or Hulu, or even a lot of networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, will have video on their own website. So you can watch TV shows, but you don't get it live. It's usually the next day or the next week you can watch a show.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
You're welcome.
So it is some of what you want to do is doable. You're never going to get HBO or any of that sort of fare. But for the standard broadcast channels and some cable channels, you'll be able to see a show somewhere along the line online, but
yeah.
It's never going to be, particularly if you're paying for a service like Hulu Plus, Crackle, there's a couple of others, you can get some stuff. But again, the days of a legal free lunch are pretty much over. All right, that music tells me we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Microsoft is reportedly on track to release Windows 8 on a similar time frame to Windows 7, with the first beta of the new OS appearing in early 2012. The software giant has not said officially when it will release Windows 8 or even when a beta might appear, but two sources claim a Windows 8 beta release is coming in the next few months. Anonymous sources close to Microsoft say Windows 8 beta version will launch in February, but other anonymous sources claim the first stable test build of Windows 8 will appear a few weeks earlier in late January. Whether it appears in January or February, an early 2012 beta release for Windows 8 is not particularly surprising. They want to get it out before the end of the world on the Mayan calendar. I mean, many critics expect Windows 8 to follow a similar release to Windows 7. Microsoft in early January 2008, this is why I don't have a radio voice, similar release schedule. Microsoft in early January 2009 publicly released the beta version of Windows 7. The near final version of Windows 7, known as the release candidate, debuted 4 months later on October 22nd. Windows 7 officially launched. A Windows 8 launch in 2012 has also long been expected thanks to leaked documents and public statements by Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer. But there are also indications that Windows 8 may be finished a bit more quickly than its predecessor. A Nokia representative recently let slip to a French newspaper that the Finnish handset maker plans to release a Windows 8 tablet in June of 2012. It's not clear if the Nokia executive meant the company will start producing the tablets or will actually be selling them in stores by June. If he means the former, then it still puts Windows 8's release along a similar schedule to Windows 7. Microsoft released Windows 7 to manufacturers in June 2009 so that device makers could begin incorporating the OS into the products. Windows 7 PCs were available in October of that year. Windows 8 beta version may not be ready yet, but Microsoft in September released a developer preview of the OS. So, are you looking forward to Windows 8? More particularly, are you looking forward to a Windows 8 tablet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. There's a couple of words I don't expect to hear a lot of going forward into the future, the Windows tablet.
Yeah. Well, I was playing with the beta version of Windows 8.
Yep.
And like you say, yeah, it looks...
It looks tablet-like, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, you put in apps.
Yep.
So you can throw in the apps. And you
get those square icons on the screen instead of what
yeah,
used
I
to
hope
see.
With the newer
tiles
version.
Tiles, they call them.
Yeah, the ones.
What do they call them?
Tiles.
Piles?
Tiles.
Oh, tiles.
I hope
it's,
the tiles you
Windows
can resize.
For your computer.
The one issue that I had, of course, it was beta. Was yeah. The tiles, you know, were very big.
Yeah.
And I'd like them smaller, and there was no way that I could see to resize them.
And that's... sneaky, tricky, I don't know what the right word is. Anyone can download the developer beta of Windows 8 and use the free VirtualBox from Sun or Oracle now.
Oracle.
And run Windows 8 in a virtual machine on any computer.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that Microsoft is letting you do that, but
why not?
They
get
want,
some feedback.
Right, gets them feedback, and you know maybe you'll get more people to adopt Windows.
Well, that's what they did with Windows 7 too. They encouraged a lot of folks to test it for free, and what the heck, if it messed up their machine, oh well, it was labeled beta, so you knew that.
And that's why I prefer to run stuff in a virtual machine.
Oh yeah,
at home and at work.
You should explain it a little bit more for some of the other
folks.
The
way a virtual machine works, what happens is. You create a space in a real computer, in a physical computer, and that space pretends to be a physical computer. And so when you load in an operating system, you create a fake hard drive, you give it a certain amount of RAM, and it creates fake ports and a fake connection to a real keyboard and a fake connection to a real monitor. And so when you load in the operating system, it thinks it's running on a physical box. But what it's really running in is a space on another computer, and that's called a virtual environment. So, for example, you can buy a honking big server, with 32 gigs of RAM and a whole bunch of processors and whatever, and run a whole bunch of virtual machines in it. Almost always when you buy space on a... out on the web somewhere, on the internet rather, somewhere these days, to build your own web server or build your own whatever, you often buy it as a virtual machine somewhere. If you go to Linode or one of those, you'll end up with a virtual machine. So they can run many, many machines in the same space. They share processors. They share RAM. So, for example, we run all of our servers at the Saunders College. the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology, is all our servers are virtual. So, for example, when our email server starts to chug, because we get so much freaking spam all the time, we can throw another processor at it and just add a processor if we want to. We have faculty who want huge data sets done. So we can say, all right, you know, we can do it on this one machine. It'll take a week. Or at night when all of our other machines are essentially idle, we can steal processors and RAM for them and get it done in a couple of nights.
Yeah.
So those make it easy to do those things.
And another nice thing about a virtual machine, especially running beta software, if something goes wrong, you just delete it and start over.
Yeah.
Because it can't get outside its box if you set it up right. And so if it, you know, what I do is I install the base system, then I take a snapshot of it. So I always have that to go back to. Then I run it. If it dies, I just wipe out the machine, start another one, move the snapshot back into that. It takes 10 minutes to do all of that, and I'm back up and running with a clean operating system again. So, yeah, I do a lot of stuff on virtual machines. The real problem is there's a piece of software that I'm really anxious to run for work. It's unimportant what it is because it's not something the general public would be interested in. But I'm really, really interested in running it, and it will not run in a virtual machine. They know that. They're going to fix it in the next release. But right now I'm sitting here going, oh, man.
Well, that's where we've had to, for a client, he's running an old Windows 98 application and needed some data pulled off of it, exported out. So we set up a virtual machine to run Windows 98, put the application in there for him, pulled up his data, exported it out, grabbed that file, was able to then import it into the Windows 7 machine. It was able to handle that, pulled it in, you know, Excel spreadsheet type of common delimited file, pulled all his data in, he's up, he's running, he's happy.
I've got a friend who's a developer. And he's got this honking big box that he calls his desktop. You know, it's got 16 gig of RAM, and it's got 8 cores in it and everything else. But he runs a half a dozen virtual machines. He's got a Windows 95 machine, a Windows 98 machine, Skip 2000 and Vista, running Windows 7, running a couple of different versions of Linux. And so he can test everything he needs to test right at his desk just by switching Windows, essentially, is all he's doing. And he runs it. And, in fact, that software is free for Windows and Linux, and I believe there's a version for Mac as well, although most Macs don't have enough RAM as they come out of the box to do that well. You know, if you've only got a couple of gig.
That's something to keep in mind when you're running a virtual machine. You're running two computers. So if a regular computer, we say 4 gigs of RAM and a dual processor. Well, if you're running a virtual machine, you probably should have 8 RAM and a quad processor.
Right. And essentially you want to have the same amount of RAM and processors for the virtual machine as you have for a real machine, because otherwise it's just going to run slower.
Yep.
But it works, and it's pretty nifty. It's pretty cool. All right.
Well, for our previous caller, I found a box from Silicon Dust called the HD Home Run Prime, and it's a box for your computer that you put a cable card into. And then can watch the scrambled TV channels on your computer.
Nice.
Cool.
So you'll post that
in the
thing. So it's Joya will...
Yeah, it's $250 for the box, or you pay the $20 a month for the Time Warner DVR.
For a year.
For a year, yeah. And then next year you'll want a better box.
Well, right. So Joya, that'll be up on our website at soundbites.org. Click on the links tab, and you'll see it there. Steve is putting it up now. It's called the Silicon Dust.
HD Home Run Prime.
HD Home Run Prime.
The HD Home Run works with unencrypted. The Prime has the cable card slot on it.
Nice. All right, our next caller is Al from Macedon, New York. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
Yeah, I've got a question for you. I discarded a reset disk for one of my laptops that I wanted to give it away to a good friend of mine, but I wanted to wipe it clean for him. And Acer doesn't offer it anymore because I went online to try to get the reset disk. Is there anything you can recommend for me how I could wipe it clean?
Well, wiping it is easy.
Yeah.
Putting an OS back on, it's going
to
be hard.
Yeah, you need to copy the OS along with the drivers.
Yeah, you're going to have to buy a new retail copy of an OS.
Or if you're worried about data, you can just go through and do get Revo uninstaller and remove the programs that you don't want on there.
And then delete your username.
Yeah. Well, it's a very long process. Yeah. If you really want to wipe the drive, there's a product called Derek's Boot and Nuke at dban.org. D-B-A-N, Derek's Boot and Nuke. dban.org. And you download that, burn it to a CD, boot with that CD, and it will entirely remove
But everything. What I would everything. Suggest you do, this is a laptop?
Yes.
10-to-1 odds, there's going to be a folder that says driver. So say it's a Toshiba. Usually the Toshiba will have all the drivers there for the video, the network, and everything else. You want to copy that off, usually to a flash drive. Burn that off. Then you can reinstall the OS. You can then put the CD or flash drive back in. There's all your drivers, so you don't have to go hunting for them.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. But you're still going to have to buy a copy of Windows. Unfortunately, getting rid of that disk means that at some point you have to buy a new copy of Windows.
And if it's an older computer that won't support Windows 7, you may not be able to buy a new XP to run on an older computer.
Think of it as, though, is if you have, say, you've got the license number on the bottom of the machine.
Yes.
Yeah. See, we could do that for you. You know, where we could literally wipe the machine as long as you got a valid license. I can put Windows, XP back on it with your license number, and then put the drivers and all that back.
That can be tricky because the licenses are coded for each version of Windows.
If you got
Windows XP Service Pack 2 OEM. That uses a different license than Windows XP Service Pack 3 retail.
So you have to
find the exact disk.
When I originally got that laptop, it had XP on it. And then I converted it to Vista, which Vista isn't really that terrific. So
no,
the person
I'm
giving
XP.
It to would prefer to have XP.
Yes.
So while I'm having this done, could I just go back to XP pretty simply?
Yes.
Well, you need to find that specific XP disk or take it to a shop that has those disks.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Well, and then there's the legality of that.
No, I've got the license.
Yeah, as long as
there's a valid license on it. It's just like when
as long as there's a valid license on the
physical disk doesn't matter. License matters.
Right. And that's like when I order Office now. I can order license. All they get, Microsoft sends to me, is these copies of the tags, you know, the key codes.
Right.
And I put those on and install and label each one who got it. They don't send the disk anymore. I have to buy the disk. I go ahead and install it.
Right. But as long as you've got the license and it's not on another machine and yada, yada, yada.
You got
then
it.
You're fine.
My butt ain't go to jail for anybody.
That's right.
You got a rough idea what something like that would cost me to do.
You'd have to call around. You can call, check our webpage, soundbites.org. We've got two shops listed there. And we can, if you call them, they can give you a price or just go through the phone book.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, that's something that we've done, we do quite often.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as it's legal, because I'm sorry, I ain't going to jail for anybody to sit there and say, well, can't you just put this on, No. Hello, 60 Minutes could be busting in the door and
the reality
you're
is,
putting, you're committing fraud.
Right. The reality is when you say that, you're asking someone else
to commit
a crime.
Commit fraud.
And that's, that if you want to commit a crime, go right ahead. But don't ask somebody else to do it. That's irresponsible and stupid.
Well, I've had that happen to me, too. Folks sit there and say, like, for insurance purposes.
Yeah.
They'll bring it in and say, well, can't you say it was this? No.
I could, but I won't.
Yeah, no way.
I'm on a new computer. Can you inflate the estimate? Well, usually you don't have to inflate the estimate.
right.
If it's physically broken or water damage or something like that, they get expensive to repair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's not an
issue. And then it depends on what your deductible is.
Yeah.
We were talking about that for...
and that's where a lot of folks have high deductible, and then all of a sudden, like they say, my insurance isn't going to cover it all.
Yeah, with homeowner's insurance, $1,000 deductible is low for fixing things broken in your house, but that's the whole cost of repairing the computer.
That's exactly right. We were talking to somebody, and they said, I've got my iPad on my homeowner's insurance, so if I lose it, it won't cost me to buy a new one. I said, what's the deductible? $1,000. Why? iPads are $600.
Yeah.
So you're actually not going to get a penny
Mm-mm.
for that iPad. You're just simply not.
No.
You're going to pay your $1,000 deductible, and they're going to give you the $500 iPad.
Well, right. So, yeah, you got to be careful with that. It's just you got to be careful of how you're managing that. All right, listen. Somehow, and it went fast this week. You've wasted an entire hour with us, but you're going to get the chance to do it again because we're going to just take a slight break while we rest our weary heads, and then we'll be back for an entire another hour of this nonsense. And when we come back, maybe we'll talk a little bit about Christmas gifts. Excuse me, holiday gifts. And we'll talk about what you could buy, what you could. So get your significant other to listen to the next hour, because we'll also talk about gifts for geeks. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And for no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show, Soundbites. We are right here on the truly great. And think about the fact that they've allowed us to do this every single week. Member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Holy moly, are you still listening? Then I guess we have to do this. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I promised you we were going to talk a little bit about gifts for Christmas and the holidays, and we're going to talk both from mostly from the geek point of view, I think.
Tablet
PCs are going to be huge for anybody. E-readers are going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
The Kindle Fire.
Yeah, that's sort of fizzling out.
Yeah, that's kind of well
burned out.
Here's the problem.
Burned out.
Here's the problem with it. It's people's expectations, and much of that is driven by Amazon themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is this: it's an e-reader that does some tablety things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a tablet. Tablets are in the $600 range if you want them to do everything. If you want an e-reader, that's in the $200 range. An e-reader that will do some tablety things, like Hulu and yada, 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 well, that's fine. But it's not going to be as fast. It doesn't have a camera. It doesn't have a microphone. It doesn't have a bunch of stuff.
The $79 Kindle is going to be a heck of a deal this year.
$79
it's an e-reader
Kindle?
Only.
Mm-hmm.
They took the audio capabilities out of it,
right?
So it's books only. The higher end Kindles will also do audiobooks, but for $79 to have an e-reader, that's quite a deal.
The Nook is very much the same. It's $99 for the Nook Touch, I want to say, and you get months and months of battery life and everything else.
It's a front to Amazon store. So the
Kindle is
Nook and Nook is Barnes and Noble, yeah.
Right.
And the stories are that they're breaking even or losing money on each physical device because they know you're going to buy a whole bunch of stuff from them on their store.
Look, I have a Nook Color. I can't tell you how much money I spend.
Yeah,
because it becomes a I'm watching television, and I'm watching Craig Ferguson. Betty White comes on and shows her new book. Holy crap, great book! I bought it.
Yep.
You know, it took me a month to read it because to get around to reading it took me about half an hour to read it, but it took me a month to get around to reading it. But I bought it because it was an impulse buy, you know.
Yep.
And so yeah, that's what they're looking for. What a great gift for students! So you can get a lot of textbooks, not all of them certainly,
right?
But for example, if you're taking an English class, the works of Shakespeare, you know,
there's a lot
Conrad,
of, yep, a lot of free
whatever.
Books through the Gutenberg Project,
right? And so, if for a lot of that stuff, there's no reason not to. And if you saw kids today, even grammar school and high school kids, with the size of the backpack, some of them weigh more than the kids do,
mm-hmm.
so they've got all those books on them. Anything you can do to lighten that load is a good thing. And I'll tell you what, for me in particular, I read everything. And so I'm always, if I go out of town, you know, I load up about a dozen books. That makes me happy. Mm-hmm. But then I have to lug a dozen books home. And frankly, that does not make me happy. Now I just take the Nook Color and a charger.
Yep.
And I'm done. And it works out much better. And I can read in the train or whatever I want to do, and you know, and it's all good. But the Nook Color is terrific. And I can browse the web, and I can do email, and I can play Angry Birds and all that stuff. But it's not actually a tablet. And if you expect it to be an iPad for $200, $250, you're really deluding yourself. Yeah. You're just deluding yourself. Look, this is the thing I say all the time. Now, here's the deal. Take an amount of money and add a zero to it, and that's a car.
Mm-hmm.
So $600 is a $6,000 car. You know what a $6,000 car can do. Mm-hmm. It can get you where you want to go.
Most of the time.
But if you're buying a $2,500 computer, that's equivalent to a $25,000 car. You can do a whole lot more with it. Don't expect the $2,500 computer to do what the $600 computer can do. Similarly, don't expect the $200 computer to do what the $600 computer can do. It's just not reasonable.
All right, and this is sort of an Uncle Dave story hour without the music and all that stuff, but I had another person get upset because, you know, they're listening to NSAR, basically. So what they did is they went into the Dell website.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, how they advertise these computers. All right, you can get one for $399. So then they start going through the whole checklist. And they start, oh, yeah, this would be nice. And this would be nice. And then they
add
go
this,
to check
add
out.
Add this. Yep.
And it's like all of a sudden this $399 computer is $800.
Yep.
It's like, well, wait a minute. How'd that happen? Well, when they show the price, they don't include the warranties and all this other stuff.
Or the monitor.
Yeah.
Or enough RAM or a big enough hard drive.
Yeah, a lot of those are extra.
Right.
So also,
and I'd like an operating system.
And they go, well, how come can't they be sued over that? No. If you want to buy that $399 box, you can. Granted, there are these other things, charges you have to pay for. But the base unit is $399. There is tax and then, you know, service contracts.
So for people like us, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we'll actually go buy components off of Newegg or something. But all right.
Yeah.
But for people like us, you look at a $300 computer and you think, I add a $100 hard drive. Mm-hmm. Now for $400, we got everything I need.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to add some RAM. So now we're up to $500.
Yeah.
But now I've really got everything I need because I can put Linux on it and I've got a monitor and I've got a keyboard and I've got a mouse.
And then a good video card, a couple hundred dollars.
If you want, depending on what you want to do with the video card, or I'm just buying a box to replace my old motherboard and putting all the other stuff from my old machine, that sort of thing. But if you're looking to buy your first machine or a fully blown unit, it's not going to cost $300, not if you want it to last.
Correct.
Or it's not going to do as much if it's a tablet. $600 tablet does an awful lot, and I'm not saying it's an iPad. It could be an Asus Transformer, could be anything. It's a $600 tablet. That does a lot of stuff.
Yep.
A $200 tablet simply doesn't do the same.
Mm-mm. It can't,
and it won't. And you can't expect it to. It's simply unreasonable.
Well, that's like, you know, comparing a low-end car to a high-end one.
Right.
You know,
I just bought this used $3,000 car, and I'm going to Le Mans next weekend.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you're sitting in a seat because that's about all you're going to get out of it.
Exactly. You know, you're getting what you pay for,
and you pay for what you get.
Exactly. When Top Gear bought a second-hand BMW M3 and ran it on biodiesel they harvested from the corn they planted the year before.
Yes.
And they took third in class at Silverstone.
Perfect.
Huge racetrack in Britain.
Yeah.
Thank you for undermining my entire point.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. All right, our next caller is Lynn from Clymer, New York. Welcome, Lynn. What's your question?
I recently purchased a new computer.
Yeah.
And my recollection was the day I plugged it in that it said that I needed to burn a set of backup disks.
Yep.
And now I cannot find any place to... I just yesterday got some premium quality disk, and I was going to burn it, and I cannot find how to get to it. It does not, well, it shows a D drive, but it's the optical drive.
You've got to find that program again, and it may not be there. Some computers...
He's saying that he can't find a drive. You're saying you can't find a burner drive?
No, the optical drive is in it, but
he can't find the program
rather than like most computer, or most of them that I'm used to.
I'm sorry,
that shows a D drive or a C drive and a D drive, and the D drive is a backup partition.
Oh, and this is an E drive.
No, there is no E. There's C and D, and the D is an optical burner.
Right. Okay.
See, what he's... No, Nick, what so, I think he's trying to do is... He's,
what the question is.
What he originally said was he saw when he booted it up that he could make recovery discs.
Yeah.
He didn't have them. So what he's trying to do now is find that program on the machine so he, now he's got good quality discs and he wants to burn them. What he's got to do is go into the menu. So say it's Toshiba. He would go to the Toshiba folder, usually on the menus, and in there is to make backup disc. Somewhere...
It happens to be... Because you might be aware... It's a Lenovo.
All right, yeah. So now there, somewhere in there, you will see a program. It's going to be buried in one of the programs that will allow you to create those backup disks. You've got to go hunting for it.
I've seen some computers though where it asks you that first time, and if you say no, it never asks you again, and you can't find that program.
Yeah, most of them though do put a folder in there, you know, off the main menu.
Most of them do. So you got to go look through every folder in the main menu.
It's probably in a Lenovo folder.
And one of the ones you never look at.
Sometimes
now I got a second question.
Well, back to the first one for a second. If you Google Lenovo, your model number, and backup disks, you may be able to find a link to exactly where that program is to run again to create your backup disks.
Yeah, if I word it that way, maybe I'll find it, because I've tried a number of different ways of wording it and without success.
Yeah, recovery disk, restore disk, backup disk, and you never know exactly what words they're going to use.
Yeah, particularly this is the first experience with 7, so that's different.
Right.
But it's a heck of a machine. I love it.
Well, here's what I just found, some instructions on Lenovo's forum. If you're using CDs, you're going to need 17 discs. If you're using DVDs, you'll only need 3 discs.
But
to back up everything on the computer.
You said 3 discs for DVDs.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I bought DVDs.
Yep.
Well, there you go. So that part is good. Now you just have to find the recovery system. Like Steve said, they could call it the backup disk, the recovery disk, the restore disk. There's a product called One Key Recovery.
It's just like the old XP Restore.
Well, System Restore is different than Computer Restore.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but I don't know what they call it.
Right.
You know, there's a. I had a Lenovo and they called it.
Well, this is a big desktop, so I don't know if that would be the same or not.
Might be. The Lenovo TKB, there's a program called One Key Recovery. That's why Googling with your model number or model name often helps find that exact program name.
Right. Okie doke?
I have one other question.
Okay.
I don't know if this is going to be helpful. Anyway, I have SpinWrite, and I'd like to SpinWrite the drive. It's a terabyte and a half drive, and I'd like to run it. And I put it in and go bring it back up, shut it down, bring it back up, and it won't boot into it. So I was looking for... boot options, and it won't go to.
You have to go into your BIOS and change the boot options in BIOS to allow it to boot from the optical drive.
Have you got SpinWrite on a CD?
Yeah. DVD.
Basically, Steve is exactly right. The BIOS is set up, the basic input-output. So you know when you first boot it up, it says hit F2 for settings?
No, this doesn't do that.
It's behind the logo screen.
Yeah.
So you may have to look in the manual to see what the BIOS key is. F2, F10, escape.
Delete or
delete
F1 or
sometimes.
2. If you hit sometimes those
F10.
Yep.
And what happens is that'll bring up what's called the BIOS, the basic input-output system, also known as the settings, and it lets you change those things. It used to be that they always booted from the floppy drive or the CD-ROM first, but the reality is that's a security hole. Because all I have to do is go up to your machine, boot it with my CD, and I own your machine.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them now come, they boot right from the C drive, and if you want to change it, you have to go into the BIOS and change it.
Wonderful.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Certainly.
Have a Merry Christmas.
You too.
The same dog.
Yep.
So, there's you got to build those recovery discs. What surprises me, honestly, is that salespeople don't tell you that, because it's a great way to sell another thing.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, and by the way, the first thing it'll ask you to do is make recovery discs. you should buy a 20-pack of DVDs.
Because yeah, yesterday he was selling fries at the burger joint.
Yeah, they don't know.
Actually, I remember back in the old CompUSA days, they were selling a Windows recovery kit, and it was 20 blank floppy disks.
Right.
But they called it Windows recovery kit. It was funny.
Right. But you know, so if you're buying a new computer this Christmas, buy the backup disks. And I know it then delays that gratification. The first thing you're going to do is make the backups. But do it because, yeah, you know what? 5 years from now, you're going to be calling us and saying, oh, I had this chance and I couldn't do it. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Our next caller is Rich from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Hey, Nick. It's Richmond. How you doing, bud?
Excellent, buddy. How you been?
All right.
Excuse me, hey, folks. Guys, I just my
I
friends
have
and
a
I talk this way.
I need an opinion. I hate to give all my money to the, you know, the big monster in the sky.
Sure.
So I want to buy a new computer. And what is your opinion on AMD doing a better job with the bulldozers? And because every benchmark I read, I'm so disappointed. And I want to buy a new processor, and I've always looked at AMD, you know, just that I like that there's competition out there,
yep,
and it doesn't seem to be out there too much. And I'm wondering, what are you guys' opinion on the bulldozer? And is it worth buying?
Yeah,
the FX processors.
I've always found AMD to be very dependable.
Yeah, I have AMD in my machine. I love it. But you're right. The newer ones seem to be a little behind.
Yeah. See, when they first came out with the Pentium 4 chips, what happened was they were excellent. AMDs were better than Intel's. Because what they did is with the AMDs, the early AMDs, is say you take the same speed, you know, chips. But the difference is that AMD would add one more task to a cycle. So if the Intel chip was, say, doing 1,000 tasks per cycle, the AMD was doing 1,001. So essentially, even though they were the same, it was faster in doing more tasks. But they couldn't say the chip was faster. It was just doing more tasks.
And because AMD has been such big competition to Intel, Intel's really been stepping their game up. And
yeah,
their
they're up against the wall.
Their latest chips are really good.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
the
you
Xeon
know,
chip is gorgeous. Yep.
The Xeon chip is gorgeous. Ooh. The AMD Phenom is terrific. Mm-hmm. It really is kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other at the moment. The Phenom 4X, the X4 rather, is a pretty cool chip. But so are the new Intels. I mean, it's a kind of a, you know, we say this all the time, but it's a leapfrog game. And at this moment, Intel has done the last leap. You know, and so right at this moment, I would honestly say that I think Intel chips are just a little bit better. And so if you're buying right now, maybe I'd buy Intel over AMD and then...
Nick, I don't want to go over to the dark side.
Yeah. Well, I would look at the Phenom 2 X4 if I were you.
Yeah, the pricing is great on the AMDs, but...
Hold on, Richmond. We've got to take a break. Stay on the line, Richmond. Back in just a couple of minutes. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we still have Richmond on the line, I believe. Are you there?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Excellent. Sorry we cut you off. What's up?
So I was about to say, yeah, I know. And the thing is, AMD's price points are still fantastic. But it's like Intel's already coming out with a follow-up to Sandy Bridge. And it's like, oh, come on. How about the APUs? Are they worth looking at?
Go ahead.
No, I still prefer, I'm sorry, I guess I'm old school. I like either Intel or AMD. You know, I mean.
I meant the Fusion processors from the AMD. That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
Oh,
well,
okay.
AMD merged with ATI Video Company. So now AMD is making single chips that have the CPU and the GPU, which makes them a lot faster. Intel is doing the same thing. They've got the chip lines out that have the GPU on the CPU as well. And, again, they're jumping back and forth, leapfrogging each other. Whoever comes out with the next best chip in 6 months, there'll be a next best chip.
Right. It's an excellent product. There's no question to that. It's just that you have to be aware that What you're looking at is you know, there's never a point. Well, again, in the IRC chat, Chris Reich said it best. It's always a good time to buy because the current generation does so more than the previous one. But it's always a bad time to buy because the next generation is going to do more.
Yeah, you got
the reality is you just jump in with both feet and do what you do.
You've said that countless times, as we both have. You know, because the minute you buy, there's always going to be something bigger, better, faster.
Yep.
Yeah, so what I just found the Intel product architecture, and they're looking at a 14-nanometer chip die size, codenamed Haswell, and the Ivory Bridge chipset. So the smaller they can make the traces, the faster the chip can be, because literally the electrons don't have to go so far.
Right. And all they have to do is add, like you say, one more capacitor, you know, in that chip, one more capacitor. You know, improves the that much more than it can do, right, by a factor of.
And what you have to remember, of course, is when the manufacturing is that tight, it's going to throw off a lot more heat, and so you need a much better heat sink. But really, Richmond, at this point, whichever one makes you happy, buy it, because the differences are that close.
Okay, guys, thanks a lot.
I hate to tell you that, but there's no. Big winner.
Then I'm going to go with AMD because I have an AMD now and I like them, and I was just wondering, you know, should I just drop them? You know, I hate dropping them because I've had like two machines in a row and I really like them.
No, I've had nothing but AMDs for years and I love them.
Yep.
I see no reason to change.
I've got a new one now with my Windows 7 machine running 64-bit and it's unbelievably fast.
There you go.
And it's an I, you know.
Go for it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, have fun.
Yep.
I think that's a huge thing. I think it's important to remember that it's hard to go terribly wrong. Equally, it's hard to go precisely right. You know, it's a wandering target no matter what you do, because they're coming out with them so fast and furiously, and they're making them so close together. That at pretty much any point, whatever you buy is going to be a pretty good product, and you should just jump in, just go for it.
Yeah, you didn't. I mean, that's. I guess, you know, it's like they say, a double-edged sword. It's good and it's bad because, well, in my field, the same with Steve. Each day, something new and is always changing. It's nothing that stands still. And I had a friend, she said to me one time, "Boy, why do you guys stay on the computer so much?" I says, "Well, because in my line of business, you know, I got to keep up with the current stuff because you get clients calling in, well, what about this? What about this?" And you got to stay on top of that, you know, if you're going to be able to recommend things, because that's the biggest thing I like to do when folks come to me is sit down with them and say, "Okay, what are you going to do with it? I'm not going to build you a Cadillac when you only need a mid-size car."
And we're not going to sell you a mid-size car when you need a pickup truck.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, we're going to fit the needs to what you do. I don't believe in, you know, "Oh, here's a generic box and this is going to do you." Some folks it might work, some it might not.
Well, because people ask me the same thing all the time. How do you know all this stuff? I spent a lot of time reading about it.
Yeah.
A lot of time. Spent a lot of time on Tom's
Research.
Hardware, places like that. Reading what they've gone
reviews
through.
And everything else,
AnandTech, the detail he gets into.
Holy moly!
Oh, unbelievable!
Yeah, and those are the kind of things you need. Right now, I'm teaching a course on small office home office networking at RIT in the Golisano College.
Soho
networking, and a lot of it is about hardware. And my entire class is game programmers, because they have a huge gaming game programming thing over there. And you know, they were, and I said, "Probably you're wondering why you're taking this course." And they all kind of nodded their heads. And I said, "Because there's so much you need to know at this lower level in order to program around some of the problems that chips have and to take advantage of the architecture that's in there so you can make faster games." Now, the average person doesn't really need to know it to that level.
Right.
But somebody like Richmond, our last caller, wants to know what he's going to be able to wring the last erg of energy out of, you know, and that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. The average person, just give me a fast processor and a lot of RAM and we're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But people like Richmond really want to dig in and go.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Dennis from East Rochester. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. Good
it
show.
Is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rob, this question may be geared towards you. My son has a Mac. It's a desktop. It's, you know, 19-inch white. The kind that has a CD you slip on the side of the screen.
Yeah, sounds like an iMac.
Exactly. Well, last week he went to go put a disc in. He was upgrading something. And the disc, you put it in, and it started loading and loading and loading. And then after 10 minutes, it's like still loading. Said, forget it. Problem is, when he tried to eject the disc out of the side, nothing. Right. It wouldn't come out. Now it's stuck in the side, and we cannot get it out of there. Big problems, it sounds like to me.
There, well, it sounds like there may be something wrong with the optical drive. Did you hear any weird noises coming from it?
Not at all.
Yeah,
not at all.
Oftentimes, that's the first clue. There's a couple of things you can do to eject a stuck disk. One is reboot the computer and hold the mouse button down. And that forces the disk to eject before the operating system loads. Another one is to hold the option key down, which actually takes you into the boot selector, so you can pick which drive you want to boot from, and it's sort of like the BIOS key in Windows. And you'll be able to then use the eject key on the keyboard to try to eject that disk.
Okay.
If there's something physically wrong with the drive and it's mechanically not able to eject it, then you end up taking the computer apart to get the drive out so you can take the drive apart to get the disk out.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So
you give up.
I would even think about
yes. You give up on that disk and you get an external optical drive, so then you don't have to worry about it anymore.
That sounds good. Well, I will give it a shot.
Sure.
Good luck.
Thank you so much, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
That's one of the problems with slot loading drives is they can get stuck in there. But the tray loading drives are physically bigger, and people want smaller and smaller computers.
Well, right, but at least with the physical, with the tray loading drive, you've got a little paperclip hole. Exactly.
Well, for a long time, maybe I don't know where that
went.
As long
as you got power, you can get that discount.
I had
you push harder without power.
I had in a little container was a CD that literally shattered.
Yeah.
In the drive.
In the drive. Yeah.
And you know, I went online and looking. And they had another story on there where evidently they decided to move the computer down on the floor because normally they wanted it up on top, but they got a bigger screen, so it forced it down the floor. They put a CD in, and it was one of those slot ones.
Yeah.
And it was making a noise, like you said, Steve, and it shot pieces out and stuck in the wall.
Yep.
And they're showing pieces of this CD stuck across, you know, because it was in a small room, into this drywall. Now, if that had been up and facing the way he said it normally did, because he took pictures, here's where it is now, here's where it was, we would have had shreds of CD in our face in it.
The drives have begun spinning so fast, you know, 50x, 52x, you know, you're pushing 30,000 RPM. And the discs, physical discs, are being made so cheap and so thin to get the prices down that, you know, any minor defect, Mythbusters did it several episodes on it. Any minor defect in the disc can cause it to physically shatter and run into some nasty problems.
Very nasty. All right, we promised you that we were going to talk about... geek toys that your significant other can purchase for you. Obviously, there are tablets. Obviously, there are e-readers, which are very important. But for those little presents, there are plenty of them at a place called ThinkGeek.com and in other places around the internet. Lots of nifty little toys. My suggestion is that you accidentally leave the screen open to a favorite every once in a while when you know your significant other is about to sit down at the machine. There's a subtle little hint.
But be very careful when you're shopping at ThinkGeek that you leave your credit card away. Because that's cool, click. Oh, that's cool, add to cart. Oh, add to cart. Add to cart. $200, $500. Oh, crap.
Yeah. You've only spent $500 at ThinkGeek? That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I go on there and I keep finding things, and I can say this because my daughter's 11 and a half hours away, and believe me, she's not listening to sound bites on a Saturday at school.
What about the rebroadcast?
She's not listening.
She's got the app from Jazz 90.1.
That's right. There is a Jazz 90.1 app. You can download it from both the iTunes app store and from the Android market. And just search for Rochester Jazz, and you will find the Jazz 90.1 app. You can listen to us. You can listen to the old podcasts. Yep. You can see all kinds of cool pictures and
take it
read about
you
the
go.
Other DJs, and it's just a very cool thing. But in general, she wants, you know, there's a thing on there that I know she would love. It's the Captain Jack Harkness greatcoat from Torchwood.
Oh, okay.
And I know she would love to have it, but it's like a $300 or $400 item. There is an inflatable Dalek that you can ride around in if you're, you know, 6 years old. So
that's only $300.
Yeah,
but no, I
Xterm inflate.
Talking about but no, one of the things I was looking at, and I just might get for myself though, is like you say, a tablet. The thinness and that, and be able to just carry it around with me. That
well, your sister doesn't want you using hers anymore.
She uses it quite a bit. You know what I mean? We're kind of.
She actually uses her own tablet. What
yeah,
are you thinking.
I know.
Well, we just mentioned that before the show that my laptop battery doesn't hold on sleep all week. So when I get here on Saturday, the battery's dead because I don't use my laptop much anymore because I've got the iPad.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The tablets are so easy, so light that I can sit there in the like the living room.
Yep.
Now, and you can even do Skype.
Last night, I went to bed and took my iPad to read a little bit before I went to sleep. Went into morning. Oh, crap. I got to sleep.
Yes.
Zero Day by Mark Rasinovich.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's terrible.
Computer
it's
geek
books. Terrible because you can sit there and do things. I was looking at some YouTube videos, instructional videos on virtual machines. On VMware. VMware has a series of things up there that I needed to read for work, and God knows I did not have time to do it during the week.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at them last night and suddenly looked up at the clock and thought, oh, yeah, I should have been in bed a good 2-3 hours ago.
There's Linda.
Linda! but yeah, so check out things like that. You know, if particularly stocking stuffers, there's lots of little cool things
in there. Flash drives, you know, I mean, everybody can nowadays, flash drives are filling up so fast and they've got a lot of great deals out of it. Here's the one thing, though, I would recommend, folks, if you're really worried about your data, instead of getting a flash drive, what you do is you can get flash drives, but they carry SIM cards in them, the SD cards. And with the SD, what I like about the SD cards is it's like an old floppy. You can lock it. And they have a lot of USB devices that they open up in the back. I carry one with me. And it opens up. You put the SD card in there, close it, and then you've got, you know, it protected. No viruses in that are going to get on it because that's how a lot of viruses are passed around. And everybody goes, oh, yeah, here, just put this in. And all of a sudden, now they're infected.
So you definitely can do that. And you know what? If all else fails, unfortunately, you can't do this in the Android market. And I think Google's missing a huge thing here. But for iTunes, you can buy gift cards.
Ooh. And they work on the iTunes store, the App Store,
exactly.
the bookstore.
So you can buy, right. So you just give them an iTunes card. They can buy music. They can buy books. They can buy apps. It's all one card. Just go for it. I know, you know. Hi, honey, I know you've got an iPad and you really, you know, want something, boom, boom, you go. Or you buy them the lower-end Kindle or the Nook Touch, $99, $79. And from now on, all you have to do is give them a Barnes & Noble gift card or an Amazon gift card, and you're good for an entire season. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you are still listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're going to be back with a whole bunch more of sound bites right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, you don't think of 47 as balmy, except when it's December 3rd.
Yeah, I mean.
And it's 47 degrees.
You know, no snow.
Nothing wrong with that.
No snow. And, you know, as a matter of fact, tomorrow I think it's supposed to go up to, I think, 58.
Yeah. We had a little bit of the S word yesterday.
Yeah,
I know. We had thick rain for a while.
Yeah,
yesterday.
I had that. I was down.
And somebody was complaining. I said, "It's the third. It's the 2nd of December.
Mm-hmm.
Look around you.
Yeah.
Tell me you deserve to complain. Shut up."
Yeah, really. I mean, we got to count our buses. I can remember as a kid many of Thanksgivings we used to have snow.
I remember.
Although we've had a lot
through the snow in Halloween.
Yep. We've had a lot of green Christmases lately, though.
Yes, we have.
Yes, we have. Well, especially that one year that it didn't snow until the third week of January. Because on the second week of January, it was a Wednesday night. It was 70 degrees. I got the motorcycle out and drove it. We went up to Park Ave and had coffee outside. Just because we could,
exactly.
And it was 70 degrees, and I got to say, I rode my bike in January, which is unheard of. I haven't done it since.
Yep.
You know, it's too cold.
Yep.
But that year, and that second week, though, it went right from being pleasant, and boom, a foot and a half of snow.
Yeah, and that's why it hurts, because a week ago you were in shorts.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's a foot and a half of snow.
Bam.
You think, oh, this is horrible. No, it's the middle of January. We got a foot of snow.
It's real.
Get over it.
Yeah.
That's normally what we're supposed to have in January.
Yep.
All right. The U.S. government reported this week that the unemployment rate is down and hiring is up. And that was good news for tech workers as well. The tech industry added 7,100 jobs last month, an increase of 0.17% from the previous month, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Data analyzed by the ServTech Alliance, which is an industry group that tracks labor data from month to month. That brings the overall employment number of the industry up to 4.068 million, which represents a year-over-year gain of 2.1%. The national unemployment rate dropped to 8.6%, but tech is up. We're finding here. So I'm pretty sure that doesn't mean everybody we know has a job, but tech wages do seem to be seeing gains as well, although the data supporting that is a little more anecdotal. Yo Services, which is a technology staffing firm, said Thursday that wages from highly skilled workers increased 6.85% in September compared to the year a year ago month. So they're saying that things are going in San Francisco. High levels of unemployment, however, kept compensation gains minimal in most sectors. The primary exception was workers in information technology fields, such as software developers, who continue to see high levels of recruiting activity and significant wage increases, according to the Federal Reserve Board. Apparently, congratulations, tech people are working. That's great. I'm not sure it trickles down to the lower end of tech, but if you're a high end tech worker, if you're a high end programmer. If you're a high-end data analyst, that sort of fare, that's starting up, and I hope that trickles down soon.
The whole thing is I don't trust those numbers. You know, the government, I'm sorry, and I don't want to say that, you know, they're totally wrong, but numbers can be interpreted one way or the other.
What they say, there's lies, damned lies, and statistics.
Yeah, and
87% of statistics are made up on the spot.
95% of statistics are made up on the spot. Get your numbers right.
And I don't want to be doom and gloom, but, you know, the thing of it is it's still hard out there. I mean, I've got a number of friends that are still having a hard time.
Well, that's why I
read
this with tongue in cheek.
Yeah, and they sit there and say, well, you know, unemployment's down. Well, yeah, probably the benefits are run out. So yeah, the number's gonna go down.
Well, and that's just it. If you're no longer looking for a job, you're no longer considered part of the job market, and so unemployment goes down by your percentage.
Yeah,
I get that.
But you're still there, unemployed.
But you're still unemployed.
Yeah.
Give us a call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. That's 1-800-790-0415. Or 966-5299.
Or they can text us at 585-209-9010.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can.
Yep. And we will answer questions in that there also.
Yep. But yeah, the unemployment is high, not as high as it's been.
And Rochester normally can fare it out. I mean, well, Rochester got hit this year because, you know, I mean, a lot of the businesses have pulled out and, you know, but we're still holding in there. We're still faring a little bit better, I think, than a lot of others.
We're faring actually better than most of the rest of the state, and this state is actually faring better than many other states. So we're kind of ahead of the game here in Rochester. I know that doesn't help those of us that we all know who are in fact unemployed or at least underemployed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in general, the average outlook is good. Average is what average is. By definition, half the people you know are below average.
Well, and the other thing that bugs me, too, though, is, you know, right now we're in this deep recession, but yet, you know, things like, oh, say, health care, which, you know, everybody needs, and I just got to notice it's going up again.
Yep.
And it's like, why don't they hold prices for a little while? Well, everybody else, you know, everybody's complaining. Well, got to get affordable health care. Well, you know, if you keep raising the game price, you know, and so many folks are only on fixed incomes, they're not getting the raises.
Well, and that's part of the problem. We, you know, the problem becomes as more and more people leave the workplace, the pool gets smaller and smaller. So if the insurance companies are going to keep up their premiums, are going to keep up their dividends, rather, then they have to raise the prices on who's left. And, of course, as we all know, if you are a publicly traded company, you only have one customer, and that's your shareholder. So they're more interested in making sure the shareholders get something out of the deal than they are in providing a service to the public. And that's their job. I'm not faulting them for that. We just have to understand that that's the way
it
is.
Well, I still question, you know, I mean, all right, here's an example. I have to get these shots twice a year.
Yep.
For every 6 months for the next 3 years.
Right.
One shot, $9,000.
Me skin on.
$9,000 for one shot.
That better come with a date with wine.
I wish it did, but all I got was a butt shot in the butt and told, see you in 6 months.
Bend over, drop your pants, and pay me $9,000.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, oh, thank God for insurance, but wait a minute. Why does one shot cost $9,000?
Yeah.
Hello?
Do you at least get to keep the needle? Jeez and crackers.
No, I didn't even get a kiss on the cheek either.
Yeah.
I had a friend who took her kid to a well child visit, which are supposed to be free, and they talked him into a vitamin shot or something like that, and she got a bill for $20 copay. So I thought it was a well child visit. Well, yeah, but you got to pay extra for the medicine. That's not included.
Right.
Well, why didn't you tell me that? I wouldn't have had him take it.
Exactly.
Yeah, no.
On the other hand, I'm having the worst time with my teeth. I have lots and lots of fillings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never had a cavity. I never hit a cavity till I hit puberty. You know, in compensation, I guess my teeth went soft. So the reality is I've had some of these fillings for 40 years.
Yep.
Right. Oh, yeah. So and they're going, and I get that. But doggone it, I'm sick and tired of it. I'm not blaming my dentist. I love my dentist. But the reality is my mouth is junk, and I'm just tired of it. I'm just really, really
we all suffer from that. Really, yeah, it's part of getting older,
more mature.
As I'm always reminded,
more experienced.
Yeah, that's another way to put it.
That is another way to put it. Okay. All right, but back to the tech stuff. We've actually spent every break laughing and joking about stuff on ThinkGeek, and I'll tell you what, I'll take all of it.
Oh, yeah, there's so much cool stuff there that, you know.
They come out with the best April Fool's catalog every year, and half of the things look so – well, they all look so well done, you'd swear it was real, but then half of them get so much notice, they actually make them.
Yep. Well, you know what, though? Every year for April Fools, I have pulled a prank that had something to do with ThinkGeek. Last year, I bought the Annoyatron 2000.
Yep.
And I have minions who work for me, and one of my minions, Dave, his door has a Venetian blind in it, right? And so there's the valence thing at the top. And it's a little, the Annoyatron 2000 is basically a device you turn it on and it makes random low beeps of various types, beeps and boops and trills and stuff. So it sounds like some computer alarm thing has gone off for a second, or you know, mail cameras. Just you don't know what made the sound because it only happens so short. It's very tough to do, and it's magnetic. So I stuck it up on the underside of the valance. So he spent an entire day checking every place in his office, even ran his hand up the inside of the valance.
Oh,
but he never ran it up underneath, and he never found it. And it just annoyed the heck right out of him. He was kind of angry by the end of the day. But the Annoyatron 2000, I loved that. It's a great product because it's so small, and you can, because it's magnetic, you can hide it up under things that people wouldn't normally look for it. And if you set it, you know, to not go off too often or too loud, it can be it can be pretty cool. So
there's a lot of
cool things in
there's a lot of remote control stuff coming out this year, and they're controlled by your smartphone.
I want the flying shark.
Yep. It's only $40.
There's a $40 inflatable. You fill it with helium. It looks like a shark, and then you can float it through your rooms or your offices.
It's basically a blimp.
Essentially a blimp.
Yeah, a little tiny motor and fans underneath of it, and it swims around and floats in your.
There's a shark and a clownfish, and I cannot imagine wanting the clownfish. I'm sure there are people who do, but I want the shark.
Your kids aren't that young anymore.
Right. If my daughter were still whatever, then yes, absolutely. But no, I don't want that anymore. All right. Look, that music tells me that you've wasted a second hour of your life listening to this show. I have no idea what you think you're about, but there you are. You've done it now. And we want to thank each and every one of you for listening. Thanks to all of those of you who called in. If you have any suggestions for a geek holiday gift, send it to us or call up next week. We would love to hear from you. Feel free to call in and tell us what you'd like and hope that your significant other hears it and gets the hint. But until next week, we're just going to take a week off, and we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. It is 55 minutes after the hour. Some of the best German music you will ever hear is coming right up on member-supported Jazz 90.1.